everybody. Welcome to Reading Your Way to Heaven. This is Jason, and as always with me, Gabe Gutierrez. Gabe, how you doing?
You know, Jason, just chugging along. Nothing special, nothing big. Just another ho-hum day, you know? Jason's laughing because we right before we recorded, I was just telling him about all the crazy things that have been happening in my family over the last few days. The most relevant of which is that my 7-year-old son tested positive for COVID-19 today.
Mm.
When I was on the phone, I wasn't at home, but I was on the phone with my wife when she delivered the news to him, and it was just straight up like, no. Poor kid just starts crying. Why are you crying? I don't want to have COVID. It's okay, man. You're probably already almost done with it. Thankfully for him, it's just manifested as like a head cold.
Right.
Like to the point to where we honestly didn't even think he had it. We were just like taking a test to be prudent, and I'm going to see my parents who are older, just probably should just be safe. But he's had no fever, no other like crazy symptoms, just congestion, a little bit tired, achy, but that's about it. But even today, he's feeling a little bit better. So thankfully, he seems to be on the mend, and hopefully nobody else has it. So we all got tested today, and, you know, stay tuned for the results. We'll see how it goes. Of course, now we all have to lock down, too. So
I was going
to
say, that's why he's mostly upset, because now he knows, I can't get out.
I know. He's going to miss his final baseball game this weekend.
Oh.
Don't tell him, though. He doesn't know that.
Oh, okay. But
he'll find out. But.
Poor guy.
So, you know.
That's
nothing
all.
Nothing exciting.
Mm. Man.
What's up, man? How you been?
Good. Nothing really to say on my end. Not as exciting as that, for sure. Thank goodness. Yeah, just trying to get settled in to the new job and life and family and transition. So
that's right. You're no longer between jobs.
Yeah, I'm fully employed now. So yay me. But yeah, no, other than that, everything else is going grand. So, but
awesome.
You know what else is going grand for is Dante.
What is going grand?
It's Dante and his continual journey through purgatory.
Yep.
This was kind of a ho-hum canto.
Yeah. I usually find several things to underline, and I was flipping through this before we started recording. Maybe I underlined one thing,
mm-hmm.
and it was just because it was at the very end, and I was mm-hmm. like, well, should probably underline something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I kind of share that sentiment.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like the first half, probably first 60% of this canto, I was just going, okay, that's cool. Don't know this Italian person. Don't know that Italian person.
Oh, there's some clergy members here.
There is. But even that, I was like, okay. They're on their way to heaven. Great.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
mm-hmm.
until we got to the Tree of Knowledge before I was like, oh. Oh, okay. Oh. You know, and get a little bit of information there.
Maybe not too juicy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then you just kind of, you know, you shimmy past it. So anyways, okay, let's jump in. Canto 24. We're still in the sixth circle, the gluttons. Mm. But we're on the back end here. We're exiting this circle and the reign of gluttony. And the Tree of Knowledge is the title of my canto, or the information here. Mm. And so
the title of mine is Canto 24.
Mm, man.
Kept it simple.
Mm,
classic.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you don't want all the info, I guess not, but you
it's
know,
clearly not as cool as yours.
You just got to get on my level, Gabe. That's all.
Mm-hmm.
So really we're continuing like we did last canto and the canto before that, we're hop skipping along. Dante still, you know, talking to Foresse,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. You know, they're just kind of pointing out, you know, the other gluttons here on this circle. Yeah.
I forgot that Statius is still with him.
Yeah.
Statius.
That guy.
Statius. I have no idea how many more ways we could pronounce that word correctly or incorrectly. Mm-hmm, but anyway, mm-hmm. that guy, I forgot that he was still with him. And then I did hear at the beginning, I did kind of relate to this. So they're walking, they're talking, and they're just moving along. And it's partly just the company and the conversation that makes it seem like it's going so fast and so quick. And you know, I think we've all had moments where you're in the car talking to somebody and you're like, oh, there's my exit, you know, you're walking and the next thing you know, it's at the end, right? Because mm-hmm. you're just enjoying the company and enjoying the conversation. And clearly this is what they're experiencing here. And as they move forward, Dante asks, so I know you. But is there anybody else here that I would recognize? I mean, because I can't physically recognize them because everybody shares the same suffering, the same shape. They're wasting away. They're hollow. They're very gaunt, right? Like, who would I know here? And now we get into this, like, oh, well, there's this person and that person.
Yeah, so we first get Picarda?
Well, so he's asking for Picarda. Like, where is Picarda is what's happening here.
And so Picarda apparently is the sister of Foresse.
Correct.
So that's the connection there. And in my commentary, it mentioned her to say that she took a vow as a nun, but was later forced by her other brother, Corso, into a political marriage in violation of her vows. Dante will meet her later on. So and you know, Foresse kind of already mentions that when he talks about, oh, you know, the High Olympus, you know, already in Paradiso.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I did like that line that between my sister's beauty and her virtue, I cannot judge the greater.
Mm.
Right. She enjoys her triumph's crown now on the Olympian Hill. Her triumph's crown. Yeah, absolutely. And just our readings on Wednesday of going through Introduction to the Devout Life with St. Francis de Sales, like that imagery of the triumph's crown on the Olympian Hill, like it makes so much sense. It clicks. Like I'm there. I can totally imagine that. I love this imagery here for heaven.
And then this is where he goes on, like you said, mentioning a few people here. So was it the first one, I think, was around line 20 of, and I'm going to butcher this.
Mm-hmm. Bona. I read this and I was like, I can't wait to hear what Jason says here.
Bona Giunta of Lucca.
Yes, that's so bad.
Bona Giunta of Lucca.
Hey.
And that one behind him. Who's that one behind him? Well, that would be a pope, actually, as you were referencing earlier.
Yes, and that pope is Martin the Fourth.
Yes.
Who served from 1281 to 1285.
Not very long.
No. So I suppose he was known for consuming eels. That's clearly what's happening here, as it says that here he is purging off the Bolsena eels he drowned in marinade. So gotta love those marinated eels, Jason.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I was looking at was, and I just wanted to make sure I was right about this, but this was Pope Martin the Fourth was also the one that, of all the sunken faces, his was the most. His had the most features there. Because in my commentary it said, since in Dante the punishment is always meant to fit the crime, the fact that his face is more sunken in then than any other would indicate that he was in life the most gluttonous of all. So he must have really loved those eels.
He really loved them. You got to understand, these are, you know, calamari's got nothing on these guys.
I'm not a big calamari fan. Are you?
It depends.
Okay.
But yeah, I do like it. My dad, whenever we go to an Italian restaurant, for whatever reason, that's his go-to. Like, he'll just order that as an appetizer for the table, whether you want it or not. It's just what he's going to do. And I think it's mostly because he wants it, but he doesn't want to eat the whole thing himself. So
guilt you into it.
You kind of get used to it. But man, it's not bad with some lemon juice on it, you know, a little marinara. I mean, it's fried stuff, so.
Sure.
Know.
Who else did we see here?
Ubaldine de la Pila.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. And then Boniface.
Mm-hmm.
Who was Archbishop of Ravenna. Is that? That's not Boniface, right? That's a different Boniface. Yeah, this is much later, 1274 to 95. Yeah. So much later, and probably named after.
Probably named after St. Boniface.
This is soon to be St. Boniface, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, who knows how soon, but he's in purgatory.
He's on his way.
He's on his way.
And, gosh.
Marchese. The drinker.
Mm-hmm. Bona de Giunta.
I'm just going to let you keep saying that over and over.
If I keep saying it, it'll stick. He's a poet, an order of some repute in Lucca, but one whose language Dante condemns, in a different book, apparently, because he was famous for being a glutton and died in the late 13th century. And, we have Gentuca. And, yeah. Was there anybody else? Bona Giunta?
Yeah, and that's who we met there at the beginning, right?
Right.
Bona Giunta of Lucca.
And that's when Bona Giunta is the one who comes over and starts talking to Dante. Or they have a quick conversation.
Yes. Yes, and then it's him who says... so he says, I see the guiltiest one. Oh, and it's Ferrese's brother Corso. So yeah, so Ferrese here, it's not Bona Giunta, but Ferrese is saying, my brother, who you mentioned, forced their sister into that relationship to violate her vows. Clearly not a great guy. The brother Corso, He is in line 82, the guiltiest one. I see him dragged along by a beast's tail down to the valley, down to hell, where you never atone. With every step, the beast runs faster, faster, till the one below he batters him for good. You never atone. Unlike here in purgatory, where the suffering is salvific, it is cleansing, and it is nothing but atonement.
And let's see, I'm just, like I said, this is the part that I was just like, okay, I read it, and there's a bunch of people he meets, talks to Lucca, they talk about, like you said, his brothers, they talk about, it seems like he's also kind of confessing of, like, Dante being like, or the person telling Dante that Dante's the better writer, and that, oh, his, you know, we didn't learn the new styles, if you will, so... that's what at least my commentary.
Imagine that Dante found a way to compliment himself.
Right. That's kind of what my commentary had mentioned about that section there. And then after that, basically it's where you were talking about, with hell and Ferrese and Dante start their conversation again. I believe this is where Dante, they have one more conversation before they separate here.
Um, Yes. So the Tree of Life kind of enters into the conversation here at some point.
Oh, wait. Okay, hang on. I'm sorry. I messed up. So the part where you were talking about where, like, in lines 80 through 90, and talking about Ferrese telling Dante, like, take heart, you know, justice will be served. You know, the people that need to go to hell are going to end up in hell. And there's two spheres, meaning heaven and everything below. And, you know, those spheres, as he says near line 88, those spheres, and he looked towards the heavens here, will not turn far before what I have said and may not add to now shall be made clear. So just saying, like, look, things will become more clear as you continue on, you know, just keep the race up. And then he finishes with, like, now must I leave you behind because, you know, you slow me down, dog. Like, we got to go. Come on, let's go.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now I must leave you, for time is dear. So he moves forward. And I love the imagery again. Like a horseman galloping out of the cavalcade charges to have the honor of the first blow. So he moves further ahead. And as they continue to go forward, they see this tree. They see the bright green leaves. And they move towards it. And as they get there, they see the souls surrounding it, lifting their hands up towards it. What did you think of that part?
Wait, where was that?
Like 106.
106. Hang on. 106. Okay. Sometimes when greedy children beg and destroy. Oh, yeah. Okay. I thought, hang on. Okay. Are those... In my mind, I was thinking those were the souls that went on ahead.
Yes.
So those are the same, so like the ones that Ferrese went to go join back up.
Do you remember they were around a tree at the beginning of
right.
the circle?
Right. They were around the first tree.
But this is not the same tree.
Correct. This is a different tree.
But still they're around a tree again.
Correct. And this tree we know is a little different because this is, like you said, full of green leaves, but also full of fruit and very lush. And so they're, you know, hungry, they're starving, they're, you know, fasting severely. So they're, of course, they're reaching up, but the tree is speaking to them and saying, no. yeah, I mean, this is what I pictured to be the Garden of Eden in the first tree. But then, spoiler alert, it's not as well as it goes on to say.
Yeah. But, so it's not the tree from the Garden of Eden, but it seemed like it's a seed from it.
Correct.
Right?
Or like a root of it. Mm-hmm. That shot, you know, because I forgot which line it was that talked about that, where basically it's saying, like, you will, you know, this is, here it is, around 116. Eve took and ate, the tree whose fruit Eve took and ate grows further up the slope, and this plant sprouted from the evil root. At least that's my translation.
Yeah.
So, like, this is still the same tree. So I'm curious if that first tree is still part of this root system.
Yeah, and I suppose it is to an extent, because we do hear somewhere from within the tree this voice here at the end recounting these times of I guess gluttony, and so kind of mirroring the tree at the beginning of this circle that was recounting stories of prudence, not just prudence, but what's that opposite virtue there for gluttony, Jason? Can't grab it right now.
I am blanking too. I would have said prudence, but I don't know. Let's see. Virtue opposite of gluttony. That doesn't help. That says abstinence. I don't think it's that.
No.
So, I mean, the seven virtues, chastity, temperance?
Maybe temperance, yeah.
Yeah, chastity, yeah. Temperance, charity, diligence, patience, kindness, and humility. So, I would probably say Temperance.
Yeah. So you have in this first exclamation moments of Temperance, moments of this control, right? Not giving way to the passions or to excess. And then in this tree now we see those examples of the fall, of the sin itself. So those examples are the centaurs, who engendered in the clouds, whom Theseus slew when they were drunken at the feast. So the case of their overconsumption of alcohol, and then the story of Gideon from the Judges, from Judges,
yep,
in the Old Testament. Where the Hebrews who just dove their heads right in just to drink the water and get as much as they could were not selected for battle against the Midianites. And then is that it? Was that
The first one was Eve.
Oh, I missed it.
Yeah, the first one is Eve.
Centaurs was the second one, yeah.
And the gluttony, and then the second was the centaur, and then the third was Gideon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there you go. I was like, there's a third one here. Yeah. And that's, so I overshot it. It's okay. And the third one, of course, is Gideon, of course, with the men who just dove face first to consume the water, and then ultimately were not selected. So they go forward. They keep going down this winding road, shimmering along the inner rim. And as we get towards the end here, there's the wind that goes across the forehead, which I can only expect that to be the removal of another pea.
Uh-huh.
As they hear kind of a paraphrasing of the beatitude of blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's blessed are they whom grace grants so much light that in their hearts the overhot desires send up no smoke for taste delight, whose thirst is always what the just requires. A variation on it, but ultimately still that beatitude.
Mm-hmm. And we're at the very end here. We are also met with an angel. The angel of abstinence. And this was an interesting one because this had a very fiery yet bounty soft gentleness to it at the same time. You know, it's just like very bright, very blinding, so bright and blinding that Dante's trying to grope for Virgil and finds his back and clings to his back. The angel is one of mercy and one of gentleness and understanding that, hey, you know, you're about to enter into the next circle. You're about to ascend into the next circle.
Absolutely. And that gets us there to the end.
That's where we end. So, the only thing I had left was just a way to point out in my commentary says his blessing, meaning the angel, to the poets is based on the second half of the fifth beatitude, like you said, the first half of which was recited by the angel of moderation on the ledge just below. That angel had left out who hunger in his version of the beatitude. The angel leaves out who thirsts, but puts in who hungers. So, you know, it's, they're finishing each other's sentences. You start the first half and then you conclude it at the back half.
They definitely have each other's backs there, huh?
And that's really it. So, anything else?
No, that's it for me.
Well, I hope this wasn't too boring for y'all. Like I said, this was kind of a ho-hum, mundane. You know, there was stuff happening, but at the same time, too, I don't know. I guess Gabe and I aren't just hip on our Italian history. And let us know what you guys think, right? Go to our Discord page. Come chat with us. Let us know. Did you find it enthralling, exciting? If so, please let us know. Like, what did we miss? Where are we missing out on the juicy bits. I mean, if you hated it and it was boring, then tell us that too. We'd love to hear from you. Best place to find that link is to go to our website, readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. And until next time, we'll talk to you later. Love you. Bye.
Love you, bye.